questions you always had, the answers you were never given, the place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
It's no great secret anymore. In the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, our government conducted secret large-scale biological and chemical aerial spraying programs like Operation Large Area Coverage, Operation Drew, and Project 112. We are entering the space age, but not the kind President Kennedy originally envisioned. This space age is replacing resource wars and redefining planet Earth as a battle space in accordance with the military doctrine of full-spectrum dominance. Tonight, we will examine how chemtrails and ionospheric heaters like the High-Frequency Active Auroral Research Project, HARP, in Alaska, service a full-spectrum dominance. This revolution in military affairs needs an atmospheric medium to assure wireless access to the bodies and brains of anyone on Earth, from heat-seeking missiles to a form of mind control. Is this what the fifth-generation wireless broadband technology, better known as 5G, is all about? To electrify our atmosphere? How sinister are these technologies? Are we being prepared for a global village lockdown? The recent release of NSA records have reminded Americans that eyes in the sky are tracking us as supercomputers record the phone calls, emails, internet posts, and even the brain frequencies of millions. Greetings, I'm your host, Mel Fabregas. To listen to tonight's full interview and all of our material, past, present, and future, subscribe at veritasradio.com. And to tell us more, tonight's special guest is Ilana Freeland. Ilana has worked as a ghostwriter for 2 decades and has edited books exposing the relationship between electromagnetics, non-lethals, and neuroscience and remote mind control. She is the author of many books, including the latest titled Chemtrails, HARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. She is the editor of Paranoia magazine. Her double major in college was creative writing and biology, and she obtained a Master of Arts from St. John's College in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Ilana Freeland joins us directly from Olympia, Washington. Hello, Ilana, and welcome to Veritas.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. It's been a long time. A lot of people have been suggesting you for a while, and you contacted me recently, so I'm glad to have you here. Now, before we begin, I have to ask you, Hurricane Harvey just hit Southeast Texas a few days ago. Now, as we're recording this interview, Hurricane Irma is making its way through the Caribbean on the way to Florida. Back during Katrina, a guest of this radio program sent me satellite images showing the ocean being heated in front of Katrina and directing it to New Orleans. Do you see any man-made technology behind the creation, the mechanization, and direction of these hurricanes? Let's begin with this.
Yes, absolutely man-made, or as the term is being used by geoengineering articles, anthropogenic. And this is an era of anthropogenic weather engineering. It began 2 decades ago, like you said, even before that. But because of Bernard Eastland's patents on HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project, up in Gakona, Alaska, in the Arctic Circle, it has really gone steroid now. And what we're seeing down in the Gulf of Mexico, which, as you remember, has been hard hit before by the BP oil crisis and the release of a chemical called Corexit into the Gulf, and Katrina, the Hurricane Katrina 2005, and of course the Haiti earthquake and hurricane as well. These are all weather engineering, and they come under the rubric of what in America, at least, is called geoengineering. Absolutely, the one down in Texas is engineered.
This one now, the one that we're seeing, Hurricane Irma, do you see the same variables here with other hurricanes as before?
Well, this one really reminds me, because I've been saying for years since 2012, I've been saying that they're experimenting. They have the weapon. There are many, many parts to it. And so what was going on for all those years, and I think we're still there, but maybe we're crossing over now into actual weather warfare. These experiments, this one is very similar to, I don't know if you remember it, and I don't remember the name of the hurricane, but the one off Mexico in the South Pacific last year. I don't know if
absolutely.
You remember.
Absolutely. The largest hurricane in history. And by the way, I knew people that I was riding with at the time. I don't mean to interrupt you, but they said, if this is so big, how come we don't feel anything? Just a little bit of rain.
Yes. And when it was parked, again, you saw that parked feature, which you saw also parked off of Corpus Christi and Bay City, where there's a nuclear installation. The one last year was said to, it was going to go into Mexico and it was just going to create chaos. It was going to be disaster beyond belief. And then suddenly they just killed it. They killed it. And that was very, that got my attention. And I believe that one was an experiment to see if they could just kill it in its tracks.
You're talking about Hurricane Patricia, October 2015.
Yes, Patricia, exactly. So this one reminded me of Patricia because, as you saw, they parked it off of the coast, the Gulf Coast of Texas, and it stayed there for several hours. And it was as though what came to me, and this is just an impression, was that there was a threat, and the threat was being communicated about perhaps telephone, perhaps email, perhaps, I don't know. But the threat was, to me, certainly the Bay City nuclear installation. And then it took Corpus Christi. It hit Corpus Christi, which is loaded with Dow Chemical and many, many chemical plants. And I don't know what is buried in their earth there, but I'm sure that it's horrific and it's going into the water table. And I feel very deeply for the Texans down there.
You're talking about Harvey. I was referring to Patricia. That was also, this is in, what was it? Puerto Vallarta. This
yes.
is where it just came in as if nothing happened, which leads me to the next question. Could this be cloud seeding? Isn't this public knowledge that there's indeed hurricane intervention technology available, and we've seen this a few times? And if so, why are we not seeing this? And perhaps we're recording this on Wednesday, September the 6th. Hurricane Irma is on the way to Florida. Let's hope that it doesn't hit. If it hits, why couldn't they do something, intervene with this technology?
Well, very important to when you're looking at disaster formations and the creation of disasters. It sounds completely opposite to what one would think would make any sense. But we are, since Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine, came out several years ago, she's a Yale graduate. Her thesis was that disaster capitalism would be the final throes or the next throes of our capitalistic system that has been in trouble for years now, as you know. So I see this as a potential, certainly one of the threads is disaster capitalism. Destroy an area, bring in the military for more power over that particular area. Bring in the Halliburtons of the technical world to rebuild, restructure, get the poor people off of the area that you have targeted, get them out with a promise of return, which will never happen. That certainly is what happened.
Katrina.
In Katrina and also in Hurricane Sandy at the international ports of New York and New Jersey. And remember, Sandy, remember that Katrina occurred at the mouth of the Mississippi River. That, too, is an international port. So what it seems to me is that we have one of the one of the very important parts of what they always intend to do, terraforming is one term, environmental adjustment. I think that's what's happening in the Gulf of Mexico. And that's a long-term restructuring of the Gulf. And the first thing you need to do along the coast, I was just talking to Billy Hayes this morning about it. He's what's known as the HAARP man. Billy and I agreed that it seems that they want the poor and and those people who own land along the coast, they want them out because they're going to they have in mind something else for the grand, glorious future of sustainable development, Agenda 2030, whatever you want to call it. And that's a potential, too. So you have disaster capitalism, you have terraforming going on, and then you have the possibility of a political threat to Texas. That was bandied about the first few days after the hit on Corpus Christi and near Bay City, was that Texas was being reminded who's in charge. Then you have another possibility, and I'm not voting particularly for any one of them, but there's always several agendas going on in these tremendously expensive and requiring a lot of components, these weather warfare events that are a high media profile. The other one would be, is President Trump still in some sort of battle mode with the previous cabal that is being ousted from the American government? And that's something possible too, because Texas is well known here as not only being almost a sovereign state, possibly even on the books, still a sovereign state from the 19th century, but it's also that the Texans very much feel a lot of sovereignty of their own persons. And so I have to put all those forward as possibilities.
All those things you've said have crossed my mind. And interesting that you used the term disaster capitalism, because that was in my next question. So if we have the technology to steer a hurricane, then what is the purpose to steer it towards land instead of back to the ocean? And I think, as you said, and Naomi Klein, disaster capitalism.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's something we always need to think of. I mean, I can go back to the tsunami and the hurricane, or cyclone as they call it, in Christchurch, New Zealand. I'm very much in touch with New Zealanders. And Christchurch, since that time, the time that they were hit, and I think it was in 2011, earlier than the Fukushima, it has been strange in Christchurch. Many things have been restructured, reorganized, new buildings, old buildings taken down, populations shifting. The Chinese, the elite Chinese, seem to be buying up most of South Island. In the North Island, then you have the Americans and the British, again, well-heeled, very much New World Order people. So is that what is in mind for this portion of the United States? And notice, you know, all of these are coastal events. I mean, we haven't talked about the other weather things that can be done, such as tornadoes. The middle of America has just been devastated by drought and tornado, and those two are part of weather engineering.
Well, the same, but a couple of years ago, the droughts in California, I remember hearing from farmers who said, we're going to have to get out. So all that land, a lot of that land with all that drought, it seems, as you said, that they're being pushed out. Look at the people, Katrina, they're never coming back. As you said, you know, the mouth of the Mississippi or the ports of New York and New Jersey. The first thing that came to mind was Agenda 21 or Agenda 2030. What is this? Are we seeing that they want to push the people to the cities and the elite will have this prime real estate, oceanfront or waterfront?
Oh, I think so. I think so. In California, I would say it's a little bit different. I'm out here on the West Coast, so I really keep my hand on the pulse of California and Oregon and then my own state, Washington. In California, that drought, which now I think is going into its sixth or seventh year, It's real. I mean, there was a flood in California last year sometime, but that flooding that occurred down in the breadbasket portion of farmland of California, it was, I think it was experimental as well to see what happens after you have dropped so much aluminum nanoparticulate, because of that's, of course, a primary component of whatever is being laid by the jets. You drop it in the land enough, and you will have the necessary acidity of the soil turn alkaline. And they wanted to see what would happen in a flood condition. And what happened was truly terrible. The water just sat on the earth. It had been so impacted and was so filled with aluminum that really there was no ability of the land to hold moisture for agriculture. So I see California, I've seen this before with California, and I'd have to name New York as well. These two, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, they are often used by the powers that be for experiments. They can be social experiments, political experiments, agricultural experiments, biological experiments, but they are often used. And I can't help but feel that that's because of media coverage, so that, you know, we're getting really hit out here hearing about poor California, and then when New York is used, then the East Coast is getting hit with media about how what's happening in New York. So I feel for California. The trees are dying down there. Whole forests are dying. And that is primarily due, yes, to the drought, but also to the aluminum that is causing the drought. And then in Oregon, it's a bit different because it's down off of California in the South Pacific that the U.S. Navy and various merchant marine ships are engaged in moving that weather system, the moisture coming from the South Pacific, moving it so that it goes beyond California, that it stops as if there's some sort of terrible plasma wall right along the north-south.
Like a shield.
Very much like a shield or wall. And then they move it with lasers up the coast. And then they'll allow some of that moisture coming in from the South Pacific to hit Oregon. And then they'll allow a bit more to hit Washington. But mainly they take it up to stick it onto, if you will, the hump in the jet stream over Vancouver Island, BC. And then that's when they can then move it with radio frequency again east and south for other weather events that they want to create, like the tornadoes, like droughts, floods, and of course meeting what is being formed in the Atlantic for perhaps even feeding the storms that we're seeing now down there.
I was thinking of insurance companies and reinsurance companies. Who's benefiting financially from all of these disasters,
Elena? Oh, yes, they are benefiting greatly, along with the weather derivatives, of course, of Wall Street. I mean, this is a money-making thing. These guys can't lose, these fat cats. And if you're an insider, then you have the means to become wealthy beyond belief at the expense of others' disasters. It truly is evil. We would have to go into that moral term to really look at policies that allow this disaster capitalism on steroids. It isn't just a matter of surviving in capitalism. It's milking it for everything it's worth at the expense of the people. Yes, I hate it.
Well, you know, weather derivatives are growing, you know, it's a growing market on Wall Street. Most people believe that weather is controlled by nature. But if someone could control it, imagine, it's already happening, folks, the amount of money they could make, not to mention using it as a weapon of war. Is this also part of the equation?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure you remember a few years ago when Iran, the president or prime minister, I don't know what he's called, of Iran, blaming the drought that they had on this weather warfare technology, sure, of the United States. Oh, he was absolutely right. But if you can make the people believe that it's ludicrous to consider that kind of control on that level, then who's going to stop it? I mean, I've seen it over and over again. When Britain was going through all of its flooding last winter and the winter before, it was confusing to me at first, because I know that the UK and the US, they work in concert together. They're sort of like, what is that called? There's an occult term for the Magog, like Gog and Magog. And when I saw them getting so hit with this flooding, it kind of took me by surprise, but then I figured it out. Yeah, you have to use your own nation for a lot of the experimentation that you might even profit from as a disaster capitalist. You have to use your own nation so that you're not stepping on too many toes while you're working out the kinks in the system. And that's what I decided was behind the flooding. Of course, UK is going into a real spin of not poverty exactly, but certainly their people too are having their incomes adjusted and their lives adjusted along with their communities physically and societally. And this is all part of the Agenda 2030, which has in mind a very different world from the one that we are all living in and have grown accustomed to over generations. So this disaster capitalism is making great use, I feel, of the geoengineering, the weather engineering that we're seeing happen over and over again in seasonal ways. I mean, you know, this is the season for hurricanes. Soon it'll be the season for snowstorms and floods. And then, of course, the ever-present possibility of drought in order to control food supply and water, etc.
Gog and Magog. I'm not a religious scholar, but I, you know, the Bible says together are the hostile nations of the world. And also, I remember back in 2010, I think it was, when all the fires in the wheat crops in Russia, also President Putin blamed this quote unquote technology being used against them as a weapon of war.
Yes, and he's right. He's absolutely right. And recently, in January, I believe, I write about it in, I think I might have sent you the essay, but they began to normalize the geoengineering this past January. It was very interesting. I had to question why they were doing it after basically two decades of denial and conspiracy theory and tinfoil hat aspersions to people like me and even scientists who, like Clifford Carnicom, an independent scientist who'd done a great deal of work on proving that the Morgellons, which is yet another aspect of this technology, that the Morgellons was actually being delivered in the chemical trails coming down from the sky. So when they began to normalize it and say, well, gosh, it's just sad beyond belief, but we're going to have to resort to the geoengineering we've discussed before. And yes, it is possible that people will suffer from this, the land will suffer, but we're going to have to do it. So we're going to upscale the aluminum oxide that we're having, that the jets are laying. And that began in January. And then immediately after that, not even a few weeks, and President Trump was in his first month of office or first month or two, and he announced that they were going to form a sixth branch of the American military called the Space Cadets. And there was on the internet, on YouTube, was a satellite footage of a satellite being seemingly being disintegrated after a sort of a triangle of points of light, plasma orbs, I call them. They're usually made of plasma, after they passed it. And it seemed that we had amped up to the space wars that I talked about, and I think you read a little bit of from my book, we seemed to have jumped into a new phase, and that it was happening concurrent with the geoengineering going public. So I'm still watching that and still interested in how the Trump administration is, first of all, number one, how much does it really know about what's going on with this technology? I know President Trump has not read my book, so does he really understand the militarization that is going on of the entire planet? Which, of course, Dr. Rosalie Bertel, epidemiologist, fantastic human being. She is now dead, but she wrote a book about the weaponization of planet Earth, and I'm grateful to her for that book. So does he know? Does he know what they're doing? Does he understand this weather technology? Is he serving his Wall Street buddies and his military buddies by looking the other way? Is he behind it? So I'm watching for all of that to see just, I know that no administration has much power anymore. And even a maverick like President Trump has to deal with powers that are going to be there a lot longer and have been there a lot longer than 8 years. So anyway, all of this is sort of unfolding before me, you understand. It's not that I write these books because I'm some fabulous expert sitting in my ivory tower. It really is that this is a national security issue. It is against the NMOD convention. It is against every convention, human rights, you name it, to weaponize the weather, which is no longer an act of God, is tantamount to crime on an international scale. So of course it has to be kept secret. Of course and what was surprising to me was that when this Texas thing happened off the coast and now with Irma, I'm amazed by how many people get it. They get that this looks like weather warfare. This looks like weaponizing tornado hurricanes. So something is shifting, and I think that that might be why they went public with the geoengineering last January. Was that the people, the tinfoil hat thing was getting pretty thin, and the conspiracy theory is like, come on, you know. So is this the beginning of outing this technology after two decades of experimentation with it? That's the question I ask myself.
I grew up in the Caribbean, so I saw a dozen hurricanes in my life there. I went through Hurricane Andrew and the Eye of the Storm, and I have been able to see how these, you know, catastrophes behave and these hurricanes move. And I've never seen anything like this Harvey there for days, standing almost like a cloud, dropping so much rain, almost as if they wanted to keep it there, dropping rain to flood the area for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. And that's, again, showing the control. I mean, the entire world is looking at this. And can you imagine the response of other nations? I mean, because at this point, I can't say that this is weather warfare and that's Russia giving us some of what we've been giving everyone now for two decades. I can't say that's China. I don't know at what point that will happen, because as you know, even when those things do occur, various saber rattlings that are rather silent, they never tell the people. This is sort of seems to be some sort of global elite rule. You don't let the people know. It's behind the scenes. You're jockeying for position, Putin and versus Obama. You know, whatever it is. But I do have hope now that the people are waking up. Not everyone, of course, but But more and more people are waking up. I've just been flooded this last week with requests to join my closed Facebook site, which is entirely dedicated to the science and of this this particular technology that my book attempts to expose. So I'm hopeful that at least people will wake up, even if we can't stop it. And can I imagine a way to stop it? No, I can't. Can you?
Not at all. Not yet. But, you know, I'm looking at my notes here, and we have so much more to discuss later. I'm thinking of Haiti. I'm thinking of that earthquake, and we have a lot to discuss about that later. But let me bring up 5G technology right at the beginning of the program. If our atmosphere is being charged with metallic particles, and I'm not a scientist, folks, but something tells me, Ilana, that the air that surrounds us will become more conductive. If it becomes more conductive, and it's the atmospheric medium to assure wireless access to our bodies and brains, do you think this is one of the purposes of 5G, to electrify our atmosphere?
Oh, I think it's much more nefarious than that. But I'm glad you're bringing this up, because I want to be very clear that it isn't a matter of a future tense for ionizing or electrifying our atmosphere. It's already done. It's already done. We are breathing an ionized atmosphere. And this is coming out in the next book that will be out in January 2019. In which I, I'm sorry, 2018, in which I try to look at the next phase of this technology, and 5G fits very nicely in with that. And that technology is being built into what is the military calls the space fence. And the title of the book is Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown. And it's the lockdown portion that I think we should move. I mean, we can talk about Haiti, but if we talk about Haiti, I'm going to have to talk about the Clintons, and then we're going to get pretty far afield.
Oh, I'd love to, by the way.
I know, but let's concentrate on this first.
Sure.
The weather engineering, it's really it's got two faces to it. It's got the one that I've already described, where disaster capitalism, political threat, blackmailing countries into obeying and doing what there is expected of them. And then it also has a seemingly positive part, in that if you have an ionized atmosphere, which we do, you're going to need to keep it ionized. It's not going to stay ionized on its own. And along with all the wireless tech that the American military, and probably other militaries, certainly all NATO militaries, seek to maximize, they call it C4, command, control, communications, and cyber warfare. For this containment and this military success, which really communications are military now, let's be under no illusion. It's not about keeping the people happy with their little cell phones, and it's primarily a military enterprise. You can use weather to energize the atmosphere. You can use hurricanes, lightning, tornadoes. All of this can keep those ions, those electrons that have been ionized, popping in the atmosphere, and that, of course, is what they absolutely have to have. And one of the ways they do that is they have the jets lay the trails. Now, whether you're a fan of the theory that what we're looking at with chemical trails or chemtrails or aerosol trails, whatever you choose to call them, are really from commercial and military jets, and they're from the JP-8 fuel, which part of which the Formula 4 is classified, I might add, for commercial jets as well. So the military is in charge of that, too. Or if you're a fan of an alternate system on the jets that operating through the wings, the ducts on the wings or off of the engine, it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, I think it's both and. I'm a real fan of both and not the dualistic either or. And it would make sense to me because as they're flying, as these jets are flying, and there are, of course, the commercial jets, but then there are the drones, the ones painted to look like United Airlines and all the others, but are really just drones. And they're being all operated from the ground. And they're laying what they're designated to lay. And very few of those pilots or you know, real human pilots on jets, they don't know what they're laying. That's not their job. They don't have to know. You know, everything in America, I don't know about other countries, but here everything's on a need to know compartmentalized basis. So they're laying these trails, and then all these trails as the heavy metals, as you mentioned, there are other things in this jet fuel. And remember, they're laying these trails primarily in the stratosphere, pretty far up above the troposphere. But then all those little metals fall to the earth. They come down and they have to be laid every day, of course. And meanwhile, they have to be activated. So we've got lasers activating them. We've got radio frequency. We've got radar units. We've got the Gwen towers and the cell towers around cities and military bases. All of this is just keeping those electrons ionized, keeping them popping, so that the military can complete its C4. And this is essential. Meanwhile, it's also creating the weather systems that you see, and these weather systems are also making energy and keeping those ions popping. So that's an important part of the picture. That's the space fence itself is, in a way, two part. There's one near Earth orbit, and then there's the ground-based installations, all of which has to be calibrated and synchronized exactly if you want to really have a weaponized planet Earth. And that is what is being completed now. The latest project in the space fence was completed on the Kwajalein Atoll out in the Marshall Islands. The way the media spin is makes it sound like, oh, well, that's the space fence. And all they're doing is they've got a great computerized system. They're counting debris around the planet so that our satellites are safe and la, la, la. But no, the space fence itself is extremely important to understand while we're looking at the chemtrails HARP technology that's producing these weather systems and weather disasters. Because between what the sounding rockets being sent into near Earth orbit at Wallops Base in Virginia and Edwards Air Force Base in California and Canaveral and Cape Kennedy down in Florida, these and Houston, these rockets are spewing out in their wake a composite of aluminum oxide, lithium, titanium, strontium, barium, all these yes.
Metal. Are you saying that we're piggybacking on these rockets to just spray as well?
Yes, and those components in the rockets, even though it's a different fuel formula, I'm sure, but it is very crucial to the calibration of the space fence machining of the world that that the calibration be the same as what is being dropped from the chemical trails here. So all this is how I think of NASA, NOAA, the NGA, which is the real one to watch. In a way, I say, forget NSA. Let's watch the NGA, which is the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. This is all being carefully set up because when those trails go up into near Earth orbit, and they will go all the way up, they will then be operated on by centrifugal force, right? They'll be spinning with the Earth, and slowly they will settle down, not to our troposphere, but they will settle down around the equator in a ring, very similar
to Saturn.
Saturn's ring, yes. Huh. And this is what is being composed up there. And what is the purpose? Well, think about it. We're back to the conductivity. All these little nanoparticles, and oh my gosh, we could do a whole show on just nanoparticles. I mean, I have a whole chapter devoted to it in the Space Fence book because this is our demise, the nanoparticles. This will be our demise unless we can really discover some remedies for the land, for our bodies, for our brain. Anyway, so these metals are, they form a ring around the Earth, very similar to Saturn. And this will be very good for communications with orbiting vessels. Between the Earth and the vessel in near-Earth orbit or even above. And then it will also be useful for whatever vessels we're sending out with sensors on them and various measuring devices to the varying planets of our solar system. So it's a communications affair, but it's military in nature. And this is why my little lone voice is not very popular in climate change groups or even some of the people who are opposed to the idea of global warming, is that I say we've got to bring the military piece into the discussion because we've entered a space age. Think about it. Who's going to run the planet? If we're all going out into space, we're going to have some sort of global king or global agency, or just like in the science fiction movies that we've all been conditioned by. And so the lockdown of planet Earth is essential if we're going to be exploring space. And by the way, I have to put a caveat there because I am one of the people that believes that we up until recently anyway, were not able to get through the Van Allen belts, the radiation of the Van Allen belts, without lead lining our rockets and, you know, putting astronauts in lead suits. So I don't at all believe we went to the moon in the Apollo program thing. It's just, it wasn't possible with what we had. They even detonated.
Welcome to the club, by the way.
What do you mean? What? You don't believe it either. Yeah,
absolutely.
They, in the 50s and 60s, and I was actually able at a meeting in Santa Fe, New Mexico, when I lived there, to to confront a Los Alamos National Lab scientist about, so why did we, I said, why did we detonate all those atomic bombs up in the Van Allen belts? What was that about in the 50s and 60s? I thought he was going to swallow his tongue. His face turned red, and then he said, oh, I don't know anything about that. Perhaps, though, they were able to create a new Van Allen belt with the bombs. I don't think it was their objective. I think they wanted to get a way through the Van Allen belts to be able to go out into the solar system and possibly not even with rockets. Rockets don't make any sense. It probably was some sort of anti-gravity ship that we got from the Nazis when we snuck them into the country under Operation Paperclip. But recently, there are indications that they may have been able to get through at least a portion of the Van Allen belts, and in which case it would make sense to me that they would be quite concerned after they have command and control over planet Earth, that they would then be able to communicate better with their space vessels if we have a ring around the planet like Saturn. So anyway, that's what I go into in the Space Fence book, is I lay out to the best of my ability, and I am getting back to the 5G. believe it or not, I lay out to the best of my ability how the ground, how all these ground installations are calibrated to operate in sync, so that we have this as above, so below, an ancient esoteric phrase between above the earth and here on the ground. And that entails the 5G. And I want to make clear to people who think that, oh, it's just one more than 4G. No, not at all. They used the term 5G to make it appear that it was just one up, more speed, a little bit more juice than 4G. But it is a creature of a very different order. And the reason is it is operating in millimeter wave range. And the millimeter wave is deadly for our DNA. So when you go through the TSA flight security, they'll X-ray your body with a 5G, with millimeter waves. And it's really horrendous. And if there are people listening who travel a lot, they really should consider just being patted down as long as we have this grotesque, nonsensical system set up at that particular border control. So when I see now that the press here in America is saying, oh, yeah, we're doing a slow rollout. We're doing a rollout in this city. We're doing a rollout here. No. These 5Gs are being put up like hotcakes, and I guess I have to think that the millimeter wave is possibly the key in the lock to the lockdown of the space fence. It appears to me that this is what it is doing. And this also introduces the very important topic that we must look at all of this for the sake of our biology, the biology of all living beings on the Earth, including the human being. And that all of this is, again, hearkening to not just Agenda 2030, which is sustainable development, whatever the heck that means, but it is about a transhumanist future, a singularity future, a la all the Ray Kurzweils who are in this technology to become as gods on the Earth with their AI. And by the way, the space fence system, as you can readily imagine, will be a completely AI run. So anyway, I've built the big picture now, and I've given you an idea of the 5G. I too am still exploring the 5G because I'm about to write the third book in this trilogy, which will be my final book, I hope, and that is on synthetic biology. And I will definitely have an entire section devoted to the 5G, because by then I will understand it much better and what it means to have it digging into our DNA.
Let's dissect this a lot more, because everything is fascinating, what you're saying. The Van Allen belt, I remember a few years ago, Alan Bean, one of the alleged astronauts that stepped on the moon, was asked, how did we go through the Van Allen belt if we didn't have the spacesuits with, you know, gold protection and the Hasselblad cameras didn't have any protection, and the space, the moon capsule did not. And he said, well, we hadn't discovered it back then. Almost as if you're talking to a bunch of dummies who believe that because we didn't discover it, we didn't go through it. Well, let me go back to these two projects. 1958 Project Argus, the Navy exploded three nuclear bombs in the Van Allen belt. And then 1961-62, the Soviets and the Americans blast many EMPs in the atmosphere and deplete the ozone layer by about 4%. Wasn't this the latter, Operation Fishbowl? And what was the purpose of these two projects?
Yeah, Fishbowl. Was that the name of it?
Yes.
Well, with the EMP, I'm a bit on firm ground, because this assault of the ionosphere has been essential. I mean, let's go back for a moment to the SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative, under President Reagan, Vice President George H.W. Bush, and Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney. We attempted to do the Star Wars program through the SDI, and what they said it was a space shield. It was going to be a space shield. But then suddenly it's tabled. In the late 80s, it's tabled. It's under Clinton through the early 90s, but he renames it the Ballistic Missile Defense System or something. And it just sort of sits. What was going on there was they simply did not have the power yet from the ionosphere. They knew they needed it. And by blasting the EMPs, that would definitely fit with what they were attempting, was to just see what happens. It's the old just see what happens thing, that it seems that technological science is completely dedicated to, whatever the cost. And so when they finally discovered, when Bernard Eastland's 1987 patent was put forward, and I deconstruct that in chapter 2 of the Chemtrails Heart book, he could see how we could build an ionosphere heater that could really penetrate the ionosphere, activate the ionosphere, then draw down that ionizing element to our lower atmosphere. And that became the name of the game. Now, what year were the EMPs in?
1961, 62.
Yeah. See, those were all of a philosophy of violent detonations, either with atomic or with directed energy weapons, they then had Eastland, and they were able to build HAARP. Billy Hayes, the HAARP man I mentioned before, was headed up the team that built the towers, the phased array towers in Gakona, Alaska. And with HAARP, they were able for, let's see now, that would have been the late 90s. They were done. They were done by 95. As you remember, Nick Begich and Gene Manning wrote that fabulous book, Angels Don't Play This HAARP.
Sure.
Nick, they both lived very close to Gakona, Alaska. And then, so from mid-90s to 2013 is when finally HAARP was shut down. And everybody thought, oh, great, it's shut down. And also the site on the web that would give you the information of when they were firing HAARP up, it too shut down. And then things got real quiet. There was a Senate committee meeting in Alaska when the U.S. Air Force or Navy was passing over HAARP to the University of Alaska Fairbanks for just for mundane research, because they had already achieved their goals, and a spokesperson gave that, and you can find that on the internet. And then after that, as I said, it looked like, oh, okay, so UAF has control over HAARP now, and people are going to buy HAARP services for by the hour for their experimentation, and it's gone pretty private. Well, maybe, not really. Again, we run into this concept that most people don't know about, and that is that in America, anyway, everything is dual use. So cell phones, dual use. Cell towers, dual use. Everything is dual use, meaning civilian and military. So now they've recalibrated HAARP up in Alaska to synchronize with the entire rest of the ground-based space fence. And HAARP had tremendous firepower during those years. as they were penetrating the ionosphere and taking many measurements and drawing it down into the earth and laying those trails, because Bernard Eastland is very, very adamant, and you can see how he thinks in his patent that you would need a lot of particulates. You would need a constant presence of particulates in order to keep the atmosphere ionized. And that's, of course, what we still do on a daily level now. So that's how I remember it. For your question, starting with the EMPs and going up to the present.
Now, do chemtrails affect radar operations, especially air traffic control, since there are metallic particles in the air?
Yes, and air traffic control, the ATCs they sign non-disclosure agreements regarding the flights, and you've probably heard this, so I'm just repeating old news, but there are certain flights that will not communicate with air traffic control. They don't have to. They usually fly above, just above, commercial flights. I was actually on my way to a conference in Toronto to give a talk a couple of years ago. And I don't know if it was because I was on the plane. I like to think it was because I was on the plane, but I doubt that that's true. But suddenly, out of nowhere, came this flight. I mean, and it was right over us. I mean, just before I saw it coming, the pilot had come on and said for us all to fasten our seatbelts. We might have a bit of a rough ride. And then here came this plane out of nowhere. And I swear it couldn't have been more than, I don't know, maybe 200 feet above us. I mean, it reverberated the entire plane. It was real cowboy stuff. And it left a trail that left us in a cloud. And I was just, as the British say, I was gobsmacked. I couldn't believe that the audacity of that. And I'm sure that at air traffic control, there was absolutely no communication about that flight. As far as did it mess up my plane? No, not at all. Not at all. We flew straight through it. So I'm not remembering that I've heard much about that. If you're talking chaff, there is a military term called chaff, which may have more debris in it, maybe a micron level instead of a nano level. That could produce some problems in the engines and that sort of thing, but I don't know.
But these are clouds sometimes. These clouds, if they are composed, a lot of it by metallic particles, you would think that the radar would bounce back and forth between it and the radar would be able to capture that.
Well, and that may be why there's such an emphasis on camouflage and many patents about camouflaging techniques for some of these planes. I mean, some people are, of course, seeing planes laying trails where there is no plane. You can't see. You can have the best binoculars, and there is no plane. You can't see it.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's not there. Means that it's camouflaged. So possibly, and remember, when you're seeing the cloud of something being laid, it's not just metals. It's also being zapped by radio frequency somehow, would be my guess. And certainly when I see trails laid here in Olympia, I see them left behind, and then it starts to fan out into a cirrus cloud cover. And what that really is because the entire atmosphere is ionized, is you're really seeing a plasma cloud cover. And plasma is the fourth state of matter. It is a bit hot, and it's a gas as well as substance. So when you see clouds, you're not seeing moisture. Usually you don't see any moisture. Sometimes if you see a cumulus cloud, there will be a dark underbelly or something, and then there may be real moisture in there. But normally what we see in the cirrus cloud cover that's produced by chemical trails is, yes, we're seeing heavy metals, but they are so tiny. And they are now heated by the natural Wi-Fi radiation in our atmosphere, which is everywhere now. And our poor troposphere, you know, we're talking 12 miles, not much, to hold all of this this radio activity. And it's the plasma that you're actually seeing. And plasma is not, to my knowledge, and I'm not a plasma physicist, I certainly read about plasma physics, but it's not a preventative by any means. It's a substance, but it's a very ephemeral substance. What I think of, maybe you saw this picture too. There's a photograph I saw on the internet years ago of Sir William Crookes, the father of modern chemistry, he's known as, and he's at a seance. He's at with some sort of channeler, and there's this ectoplasma, or I think they called it ectoplasm form next to him of a woman, and the ectoplasm is actually plasma. And I have no idea how they did that photograph. Maybe it was just doctored and it was put up as real. But I know that Sir William Crookes was very interested in the chemistry of ghost-like substance. And I don't know that he had the term plasma, but he certainly had the term ether. And ether and plasma are very fascinating to me. And I have an entire chapter devoted to them and to scalar technology, which is what we're talking about. We're talking about scalar technology.
I think Tesla discussed this too, but we have to take a one and only break. But let me just read a couple of things before you give me the answer on the other side. I saw one of those internet memes a few days ago about chemtrails, and it read, "I don't care about conspiracy theories, but who has the time and money to do this?" That's what it said. So this should be a question in everyone's mind. Who has the time and the money to do this? We'll discuss this when we come back. Also, either these planes are mostly remotely controlled, and we know the technology has existed for decades, or the pilots must have to sign a very strict confidentiality agreement, a blood oath. How come we haven't seen anyone come forward? And so much more when we come back. Elena, how can people buy your book and learn more about your work?
The Chemtrails Harp book is available on Amazon, easy to get. And the book on the space fence won't be out till January 2018, but you can pre-order it also on Amazon. And then I haven't had time to make my own website or a blog site, though I'm working on one now. So I recommend people ask for membership to my closed Facebook site. And it's simply my name plus most of the title of the book, Elana Freeland, Chemtrails, Harp, and the Full Spectrum. And there's so many people doing excellent research on this. I am certainly not the only one.
The name of the book is Chemtrails, Harp, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. And folks, believe me, you don't want to miss part two of this show. This is Mel Fabregas, and you are listening to Veritas. Don't go anywhere. Thank you for listening to the first part of this very important Veritas interview. To listen to the rest and all of our archive material, go to the members section or subscribe at veritasradio.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for great products, including pure organic sulfur, rebounders, turmeric, and more. Thank you.